Opinion polls, this is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Opinion polls suggest that Tony Blair will lead his Labour Party to victory in tomorrow's British elections, but it is not expected to be easy. Prime Minister Blair enjoyed enormous majorities in the House of Commons after his first two election campaigns. This time around, his chief rivals, Michael Howard of the Conservative Party and Charles Kennedy of the Liberal Democrats, well, they're both hammering away at Blair's increasingly unpopular decision to take his country to war in Iraq. The Prime Minister continues to defend that decision, but prefers to emphasize 8 years of economic growth and improvements to Britain's National Health Service and to education. Immigration, Europe, and the Transatlantic Alliance are also issues in the campaign. Later in the program, writer Philip Caputo returns to Kent State 35 years after he covered the shootings there. But first, tomorrow's British elections. If you're from the UK, call us with your take on Blair and the election and why people in America should pay attention. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is James Blitz, political editor for the Financial Times. He's with us by phone from the House of Commons in London. Good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much.
The latest opinion polls from Britain put Labour anywhere from 3 to as high as 14% in the lead.
Yes, there are actually opinion polls coming out in four national newspapers in Britain tomorrow morning, and they're showing a slightly narrower gap for Labour, with Labour between 3 and 6 points ahead in those four polls. That's pretty comfortable, I suppose. It should give Mr. Blair a majority of around 80 to 100 at least in the 658-seat House of Commons. So I think Labour will be pretty pleased with that.
And curiously, a lot of the most passionate people opposed to Tony Blair are in his own party.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Mr. Blair, as you know, has been through a very difficult few years in the United Kingdom, mainly because of the war on Iraq, which has been, without any question, the most heated topic of discussion in the UK election campaign, with many people sort of looking at why we went to war with Iraq. Was there a legal or a justification and an intelligence justification for doing it? And although there hasn't been in the campaign a lot of attacks from people within his own party, there's the kind of solidarity you would expect from a political party in the course of a campaign. Nevertheless, Mr. Blair knows that around 50 Labour MPs will be returned at this election tomorrow, who are really very hostile to him. So he does have to have a majority of at least 50, and more likely 70 or 80, to be absolutely sure of ruling with a comfortable mandate.
The other issue, of course, let's talk about the other two major candidates. Michael Howard of the Conservative Party. Well, one of the things he's got a problem with attacking Blair on the war. He attacks Blair's integrity, says we can't trust him, but he endorses Blair's policies on the war.
Yes. The difficulty for the Conservatives in this election campaign, and indeed for the last 2 years, is that their position on the war has really been very confused as far as the British public is concerned. The Conservatives supported Tony Blair over the war. They gave very firm support to that. In fact, they were absolutely essential for ensuring that the parliamentary vote for British troops to take part in the war was passed. Nevertheless, in the period since the war was over, they've attacked Mr. Blair for not using the intelligence properly to justify the action of going to war and not having the proper legal base. It's a very confused position, and it's not one which has gone down particularly well with the electorate.
The third party in Britain, the Liberal Democratic Party, has opposed the invasion from the beginning. They've been very consistent on the war. Here's a clip of Charles Kennedy, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, describing their position.
We can't even turn round as a country and say how many innocent Iraqis did die because we've never bothered to do the body count. When I say not in my name, Mr. Blair, it's not just that I disagreed with the government on the policy. I'm ashamed of what the government did in the name of our country.
And with statements like that, the Liberal Democrats have become, they've gained a lot of protest votes, haven't they?
That's absolutely right. This is turning into a good election for them, and their share of the vote is certainly going up. They, unlike Mr. Howard, they are very clear and very consistent over the war. They've opposed it from the start. They never thought that it was the legal basis or the intelligence basis to do it. The problem for the Liberal Democrats and the British political system is the old one, which is that when you have an electoral system like ours, where you're effectively having races in some 650 constituencies where only one person can win, in most of those races, the winners are candidates from the first two parties, the Labour or the Conservatives. If you're the third party, it's very rare indeed that you can actually come first in a first-past-the-post system. So they would have to have a very considerable increase in the share of the national vote to come anywhere near forming a government, and that's just not going to happen.
There are, of course, issues beyond Iraq, especially if you listen to Mr. Blair, but the Conservative Party, led by Michael Howard, again, has attacked Prime Minister Blair for being too lax on immigration enforcement, and here's a clip of Michael Howard talking about the dark side of illegal immigration.
I want this country to continue to give sanctuary, but not to the people who pay the people traffickers. I want to give sanctuary to the mothers and the children who can't afford to pay the people smugglers, who aren't strong enough to be transported in the backs of lorries halfway across the world. That's what I want to do. I want a much fairer and more humane system than we have today.
Is illegal immigration a serious problem in Britain and a serious issue in this campaign?
It is a serious issue in the campaign, and without any question, it's the issue which Mr. Howard has put absolutely at the centre of his campaign. It's no more of a problem in the United Kingdom than it is in any other country, and indeed one of the arguments that's made by Mr. Blair is that in many ways it's not nearly as serious a problem in this country as it is in many European states. What Mr. Howard has done is, I think, he's shored up his core support very well by playing this immigration card. What he's saying is we've got to have an annual fixed limit on the number of immigrants that can come into this country. And what he's done is he's ensured that a very large number of Tory supporters are actually going to come out and vote tomorrow in the UK. What he's not done, however, is really win over anybody from Labour or the Liberal Democrats on this very hard-line stance on immigration. Indeed, what he by taking the stance so strongly and so severely on immigration, he seems to have ensured that quite a lot of people who support Labour who might not have come out to vote will actually come out to vote. So I think in many ways this strategy has actually backfired for Howard.
Let's get some calls on the air. Our number, if you'd like to join us, is 800-989-8255, and the email address is totn@npr.org. We'll begin with Paul, and Paul's with us from Madison, Wisconsin.
Hello. Hi,
you're on the air, Paul.
Hi, I'm an American who's lived in the UK for 25 years, and I've been very proud to live there. The National Health Service and the fact that violent crime is some factor of 70 lower than it is in the U.S., but I've been disappointed with the record of Mr. Blair. Despite his successes domestically, I've been disappointed by how he's handled the war in Iraq.
James Blitz, Paul's position is, a lot of Britons would agree with him.
Yes, I think a lot of Britons would agree with the way he's handled the situation on Iraq, because what seems to have basically happened is that Mr. Blair took the principled decision to support George Bush in the war on Iraq, and then, this is the argument that's made against Mr. Blair, he then sought to find the justification from the intelligence and legal base to actually go ahead with that, and that got Mr. Blair into some very tortuous and difficult situations, basically, because as I think you've seen in the United States with the CIA, the intelligence case against Saddam just didn't stack up, mm-hmm. and that's created all kinds of problems for Blair.
On the other hand, Paul's other point, though, that, he likes Labour's policies on domestic policies. The economy's doing well, national health, education.
That's absolutely right. I think the strong card that Labour can play at this election is that the situation on the economy is very good indeed. We've had 8 years under Labour of uninterrupted economic growth, which has been, without any question, the central card they can play before the electorate. And what they've also done is they've pushed through significant new investment in health, particularly, and that means that a lot of people are feeling there's a much better state health service in the United Kingdom.
Let's talk now with Jay, and Jay's with us from Redwood City, California.
Hi, good afternoon or good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, I'm actually already voted. I'm a British citizen. I've been living in Redwood City since 1998.
And if you don't mind disclosing, how'd you vote?
I voted Labour. I actually voted for my local candidate in my local constituency.
Which is where?
Hillingdon.
And which is where?
London Borough Hillingdon near Heathrow.
Okay.
Yeah. And I voted Labour because I didn't want the Conservatives to come in, especially Michael Howard.
And why that? What particular policy of his do you have problems with?
I just remember a quote from one of his ministers from when he was in government that said he was something about the darkness of the night about Michael Howard.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt that Michael Howard just ruined the country. And also, I think Tony Blair's not going to be in power for very long, and Gordon Brown will step in.
Well, that, James Blitz, is a key point. Jay, thanks very much for the phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Gordon Brown, who is the Chancellor of the Exchequer, the equivalent of the Secretary of the Treasury in this country, well, he's been number two to Mr. Blair for a long time and appears set now to become sometime in this third term number one.
Yes, that's absolutely right. The situation you have at the moment is that Mr. Blair said at the end of last year that if he wins the general election tomorrow, he's not going to stand in the general election which would take place in the UK in 2008-2009, and that at some stage in this third term he would actually stand down. He's not specified exactly when he will stand down. Nevertheless, when he does, it could be in 2 years, could be in three or four. Gordon Brown is without any question the preeminent candidate to take over. It's extreme. If Mr. Blair were to quit tomorrow, for instance, he would without any question be the person most likely to take over.
And oddly enough, the two candidates who dislike each other the most are the two people at the top of Labour, Mr. Blair and Mr. Brown.
It's an extremely complex relationship. On the one hand, they are the two founders of New Labour, the two people who in the mid-1980s repositioned the Labour Party as a traditional, from being a traditional party of the left to one which occupies the centre ground of British politics and is has a very strong appeal with middle-class voters. So that is their joint achievement. The trouble is, as you often find when there are two people at the top, there's one person who's in the top seat and there's another one who isn't. And the person who isn't, Mr. Brown, would like Mr. Blair to go, basically, and he had expected him, so his aides say, to quit in the course of last year. Mr. Blair did not quit. He stayed on. He said he'd fight this election. That's created a certain amount of irritation in the Brown camp. Now, what you've seen in the course of this campaign is that the two men have actually set aside their differences. They've come together. They've campaigned side by side for the last 4 weeks, almost without a break. And the big question now is whether that will actually continue. Will they stay together as a kind of friendly duopoly at the top of the party, or will the differences between them, which have been very severe, not only on issues of leadership and politics, but also on policy, will those differences come out in the next year or so?
James Blitz, thanks for taking the time out to talk to us on what must be a very busy day for you.
Thank you very much for having me.
James Blitz is the political editor of the Financial Times and joined us from the House of Commons in London. We're talking about tomorrow's general election in Britain and why it's important for the United States. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Britain goes to the polls tomorrow, and Prime Minister Tony Blair will learn if he's earned an historic third term. He would be the first Labour Prime Minister to win a third election. We're talking about the stakes in this election this hour on the program. We'd especially like to hear from any British expats in our audience or those Americans who have concerns about why this should be of importance to this country. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Dan Balls, a political correspondent for The Washington Post. He's been on the campaign trail in Britain following the candidates and talking with voters, and he joins us now by phone from London. Good evening, your time.
Good evening. How are you, Neil?
Very well, thank you. You've been out there talking to voters. What are they concerned about? Is it Iraq? Is it the economy? Is it the price of gasoline?
Yes, is the answer to that. Iraq is obviously a very big issue. In the end, it's not clear how it's going to play out, but the dissatisfaction with Blair, particularly within his own party, is very significant. And the Labour Party strategists are worried that there are people who are either going to stay home because they're unhappy with Blair over the war, or they're going to cast a protest vote, which could, you know, diminish his margin in the next parliament. So Iraq is a very important issue. The economy is another issue, though, and that plays very strongly for Blair. They've had eight strong years of the economy here under Blair and Gordon Brown, the Chancellor of the Exchequer. And, you know, I talked to a voter down in Dover a couple of days ago who said, you know, I know there are a lot of people who are not happy with Blair because of Iraq, but he said, you know, this country's economy is the envy of Europe, and he said, you know, it's a reason to keep him in there. So that's helping Blair. There's another issue that the conservatives have stressed, and it's one where they have had an advantage, according to the polls, and that's immigration. There was a period here when the borders were sort of out of control. Asylum seekers were sweeping in. The British government did not have a good system for dealing with it. It has caused some resentment. It's one of these issues that is very polarizing and very divisive. The Tories have been accused of playing the race card on it, but there's no question that it's been out there. I think at this point there's some judgment that the Conservatives may have overplayed their hand on that, but in part the Blair and the Labour government, particularly Blair himself, have come back very strongly on this to deliver a very tough message saying we will keep things under control.
As you watch this election, how is it similar and how is it different from elections in this country?
Well, it's so wonderful. You know, I spend most of my time covering elections back in the U.S., and I'm on a busman's holiday over here for the week or so. One thing that's hugely different is the length of time. I mean, this is a six-week campaign or a five-week campaign. I mean, we are now used to, almost literally two-year campaigns. Our general election campaign began in March of 2004 and went all the way through to November without any let-up. This is a very intense pace, but it's very short. The second is they're much cheaper. I mean, just the money that we see spent in our campaigns just swamps by factors of 4, 5, 10 the amount of money that's spent in campaigns here. The third thing, and it's related, to the money, is and also the rules over here. Political advertising is not a factor. The parties do what they call political, brief political ads, but they have nothing the equivalent of the 30-second advertisement over here. And so the delivery of a message, a political message, is quite different and in many ways more difficult. And I think the fourth thing that's striking to those of us who cover politics back in the U.S. is the degree to which the party leaders, beginning with Prime Minister Blair, are accessible for questioning. They hold regular press conferences. They are, as I've watched the television, they're constantly being interviewed on television. Last Thursday evening, there was a 90-minute program on the BBC in which it was a kind of a town hall meeting. Each of the three party leaders was on for a half hour separately, and the audience of just ordinary folks just pummeled them, particularly Tony Blair. So the number of questions and the amount of press questioning that they deal with is way beyond what either President Bush or John Kerry faced or dealt with in our campaign last year.
Let's get another caller on the line. Brian is calling from New York City.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little confused. I hear some things that the Conservatives do that sound more like what we would consider liberal, and the Labor would do some things that sound more like conservative and vice versa. What are the major differences, and how do they differ from, let's say, the liberal-conservative split here? I mean, are the Conservatives there pretty much in line with the same things that Conservatives here would, or is it something completely different? I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, Brian, thanks for the call.
It's a good question. In general, there are clear parallels. The Labor Party here is very much akin to the Democratic Party in the United States, and the Conservative Party here is very similar to the Republican Party. But there are some differences. I mean, politics in general here is a little farther to the left than it is in the United States. They have a National Health Service, which is something that that we don't have anything the equivalent of. And there is nobody in the Conservative Party who is arguing to abolish the National Health Service and go to a totally private system of health care. At the same time, under Margaret Thatcher's Conservative government in the 1980s, there were a number of reforms in the economy in which she denationalized a number of the industries and made the economy here much more market-oriented, more akin to the United States. One of the reasons that Blair and Labor were elected in 1997 was that they, in essence, said they were not going to reverse that. They have accepted much of what Mrs. Thatcher did in terms of the economy. There is another important difference that has, again, been striking to those of us who cover politics, and particularly Republican politics back in the United States. Religious and sort of the social issues do not exist over here in the same way they do there. Michael Howard, who's the leader of the Conservative Party, raised at one point the abortion issue and basically was just kind of pushed off the table with it. Nobody wants that to be an issue. There is pretty widespread acceptance here of abortion rights. Similarly, the issue of gay rights is not any part of the conservative platform. There is uh, a, a district down south of London on the seacoast, and there is a conservative candidate running there who is openly gay, and the party has fully embraced him, and there's no question about whether he is in some way or another running against his own party on social issues. They simply aren't part of the campaign dialogue.
Here's an email question from Dimitri. How does Britain's relationship with the European Union affect the election?
Well, one of the things that Tony Blair has wanted to do as prime minister is make Britain more comfortable as a part of Europe. He's not been completely or really significantly successful in that. He, when he came in, talked about bringing Britain into the single currency in Europe, but he has not pushed that, and Gordon Brown has laid out a number of strict economic tests that have made it essentially impossible for Blair to even try to do a referendum on it. There are a lot of people who have thought through this 8 years that had he tried that, he would not have been successful. On the other hand, what Blair has tried to do is essentially keep the special relationship that has long existed between Great Britain and the United States, but to try to make Britain a player in Europe. Now, there is a referendum coming up on the European Constitution, and they'll be voting on that in France at the end of the month. If that passes, then it's likely that Britain will face that same question sometime next year, and that will be a very important test of how much Britain is ready to become more integrated with Europe.
Let's get another caller on the line. Daniel's with us from Louisville.
Hi there, Neil. I'm a first-time caller, but long-time listener.
Well, thanks for both.
My view is that the United States, or at least its citizenry, should pay more attention to such countries as Britain because we're going to, I believe, be phased out over time as the world leader in international negotiations, especially after the fiasco with Iraq and losing the trust of the international community. I think that on issues such as the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and negotiations between India and Pakistan over Kashmir and the many conflicts in Africa, insurgencies and governments, I think that Britain is going to step up to the plate as they had in the past and once again be leaders. And secondarily, I think that Britain is an important ally to us, not just because of the war on terror, but because United States interests internationally, such as negotiations with China to increase trade and to keep them from buying and selling weapons, and also with the expansion of the United Nations Security Council, since Great Britain is another permanent member. We need their assistance in getting India and Japan and Germany and other large countries involved in the process. I wouldn't say to the exclusion necessarily of France, but, you know, there's a new world order, and Britain is the only country to remain a superpower for several hundred years.
A lot of people would question that superpower part of it, but Daniel's point, Dan Balls, are people in Britain, it's the idea of Britain's place in the world and its place on the world stage, is that at all an issue?
No, not so much a direct issue in the campaign. It really plays out with the Iraq issue, Neil. Not the broad question of Britain's role. I think people have liked the idea of Blair being, assertive in keeping Britain in the forefront of world issues. Iraq is a big exception on that. But one of the things that's been important, I think, in the calculation, if you will, of Blair in his relationship with Bush, it's twofold. I mean, one is that he knows it is important for any British prime minister to have a good and solid relationship with whoever is president at that time. When he came into office, when he was in office and Bush came into office, he had a conversation with former President Clinton, with whom he was very close, and Clinton urged him to have a good relationship with Bush. One of the things that they have argued here is that, despite the criticism they've gotten over that relationship, that it has been important for Blair to be as close to Bush because it has given him the opportunity, to perhaps shade some elements of the policy with Iraq, to at least try to go back to the United Nations for a second resolution, unsuccessful as that turned out to be, also to push Bush harder, as he's done repeatedly, to get the United States more directly involved in the Middle East, particularly in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And to some extent, I think they feel that they were successful in that. So there are a variety of areas in which they think that, obviously, there have been some negatives in that relationship, but they think there's some positive things that have come out of it as well.
Daniel, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And Dan Bowles, I know it's busy for you, too. We appreciate your time today.
Happy to do it.
Dan Bowles, political correspondent for The Washington Post, joined us from London. As we mentioned, at least according to the opinion polls, Tony Blair is likely to win a third term as prime minister tomorrow. This would be an unprecedented victory for a Labour prime minister. Joining us now is John Rentel, the author of the biography Tony Blair, Prime Minister. He's also a columnist for the Independent newspaper in Britain. He joins us from his home in England, and good to speak with you on Talk of the Nation.
Hello there.
Hello. This is a last hurrah for Tony Blair. He has changed a great deal from the sunny, buoyant man who first astounded British politics 8 years ago.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't changed that much. I mean, he is sunny and buoyant still. What's changed is people's perceptions of him. When in his first term, he was regarded as a smiley face who was all things to all people. In his second term, he suddenly transformed into this Margaret Thatcher-like conviction politician who had taken us into a military conflict in Iraq, which was intensely unpopular with a section of the population, including, crucially, most of the people who run the media in this country.
We're talking with Blair biographer John Rentel. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let me ask, this transformation to a conviction politician, like George Bush, Tony Blair is deeply religious. Blair has said, and we're going to hear a clip of tape here, that he's reluctant to mix faith and politics.
I don't want to end up with an American-style type of politics, with us all going out there and beating our chests about our faith. Politics and religion, it's not that they don't have a lot of things in common, but it is just that if it ends up being used in the political process, I think that's a bit unhealthy.
How does religion figure into Tony Blair's leadership?
Well, it is central to his personal character. He is a deeply religious man, but he is also enough of a politician to know that religion is regarded with deep suspicion by most British voters. I mean, Britain is a pretty secular and skeptical country, and it doesn't like public displays of religiosity from its leaders. So he tends to play down his political beliefs, and he tends to get a lot of stick from the liberal mocking media about his Christianity and the fact that George Bush is also a firm believer. And there's a lot of rather ignorant speculation about whether they pray together and so on and so forth, but it's not a big issue in British politics.
Does Tony Blair, do you think, consider that his goals, his ideals, his aims for Britain, does he need this third term to enact them, to leave the legacy, the kind of legacy he would like to?
Oh, absolutely, because his first term was deeply frustrated by the fact that he inherited tight budgets set by the Conservative Party. So it took some time for his reforms of the public services, the free healthcare and the free education system, it took some time for those changes to come through. Then his whole second term was completely dominated, completely wiped out by the controversy over Iraq. So now he hopes that if he can win a mandate despite the opposition to his Iraq policy, then in his third term he can leave a lasting mark on British politics.
Given the antipathy to him by so many members of his own party, if he wins a fairly narrow majority, does that suggest to you that it might be a shorter rather than longer time before the transition to Prime Minister George Brown?
Gordon Brown. You
Gordon Brown, excuse me, yes.
The Chancellor. No, unless it's a very, very small majority, unless it's a majority which makes it difficult to carry votes in the House of Commons week in, week out. Because politics, you know, as everybody always says, you know, you just need 50% plus one, and that's good enough. If he has a working majority so that he can generally win most votes in the British Parliament, then he will carry on for as long as he can, which is, say, 3.5 years before we have to start thinking about having the next election in this
country. In this country, he'd be seen as a lame duck pretty quickly.
Yes. Well, I don't know. George Bush, is he regarded as a lame duck already? I think the first half of a president's second term is usually the period when he can get things done. I don't know, politics is like that. It depends the extent to which your successor is expected to carry on the same sort of policies. And although Gordon Brown's tone is very different from Tony Blair's, his policies are essentially the same. I mean, his approach, his New Labour approach, is shared with Tony Blair. They were the common architects of that political strategy.
John Rentel, thanks very much. Appreciate it. John Rentel is the author of the biography Tony Blair, Prime Minister. He's also a columnist for The Independent, and he joined us from his home in England. When we come back from a short break, we'll remember the shootings at Kent State University 35 years ago today with writer Philip Caputo. His new book, 13 Seconds, searches for the meaning of that violence. If you'd like to join that conversation, 800-989-8255, email TOTN at npr.org. This is NPR News.